This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll head to Sutter County to check in with Health Officer Dr. Fong Liu about the increase in COVID-19 cases happening there. And we'll hear from a UC Davis infectious disease expert about guidance and tips on mitigating your risk of contracting the virus in public and during travel during this pandemic. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Monday, June 15th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, the news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. California's death toll from the COVID-19 outbreak has exceeded 5,000 as the number of cases nears 150,000. According to data released Sunday, the most recent available, 5,063 Californians had died from the virus, including 437 over the prior 7 days. Meanwhile, the caseload increased by 3,212 on Sunday, reaching 148,855. Deaths are increasing at a weekly rate of 9.4%. The number of cases is rising by 15.5% a week as of Sunday. Governor Gavin Newsom provided some reassurance Monday, saying an increased number of cases was expected following the reopening. In remarks, Newsom said ample capacity remains both in California hospitals and intensive care units.
We have seen in the last 14 days about a 4.4% increase. It's an increase nonetheless. Again, no increase in ICUs, an increase of 4.4% in hospitalizations. But again, considering we worked through the stage two, May 8th opening and Memorial Day, those numbers are encouraging, though nonetheless, we want to see these numbers decline.
In the North State, cases are becoming more widespread and new cases are appearing faster as well. The number of positive cases across the 11 counties, according to figures available early Monday afternoon, was 334. That's after new cases were found in multiple counties. A bump in cases in the southern Sacramento Valley has placed Sutter County, now with 86 cases, as the region's most impacted county. Health officials in Butte County say they've now confirmed a total of 82 cases. Shasta County is reporting 50. Yuba County reports 35. Glenn County reports 24. Tehama County, 21, Siskiyou County, 17, Colusa County, 7, Lassen and Plumas Counties, 5 each, and Trinity County, 2. At least 11 people with COVID-19 have been admitted and remain in hospitals for treatment. Fatalities across the region remain at 9. Caltrans says its crews resume highway-side cleanups Tuesday. Litter removal along freeways and highways throughout the state was suspended due to the outbreak. Several campgrounds and other recreational sites in the Mendocino National Forest are scheduled to reopen Tuesday. 9 campgrounds, however, will remain shut, along with areas damaged by fire in recent years. And Butte County officials announced a partial reopening of the administration building in the county office complex just north of Oroville. Public hours will resume at the county assessor, auditor, district attorney, and treasurer tax collector, though officials urge the public to verify information on the county's webpage. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Life is reopening more and more across the country. And as you heard in that newscast, COVID cases are continuing to go up both in the state and our region as more and more people are getting out of their homes. In the North State, Sutter County now has the highest number of reported cases, leaving public health officials there left tracking down all possible case contacts. Officials there say they and counterparts in 3 other counties are currently trying to find about 40 people who attended a birthday party where at least one event-goer had COVID-19. For more on that and on the overall increase in cases there, NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with Dr. Fong Liu, health officer for Sutter and Yuba counties, who says tracing the movements of those in attendance at the party has not been easy.
It's been quite difficult to follow all 40. We're not able to reach all 40. And it's actually across multiple counties. We are not an island in and of ourselves. And when people go to these large gatherings, especially when they know that they are already symptomatic, it makes the contact investigation very difficult and very challenging, because now we're trying to quickly identify all the individuals, but it's been a significant challenge.
In the last couple of weeks, there's been an increase in cases, especially in Sutter County. Why is that?
This is not unique to Yuba Sutter region. As you look at the entire state, we're seeing an increase in the case count. We're seeing an increase in hospitalization overall. And then within particular the Sierra Sacramento Valley region, every county is seeing a significant increase in the case counts: Sacramento, Placer, El Dorado, Butte, etc. There are themes to where the increased case counts are coming from. One is that they're coming from household and family clusters, meaning that these individuals are familiarly related. They don't live in the same household under the same roof, but they're not adhering to social distancing tenets that we have been pushing.
Dr. Liu, if I could break that down, that would be like people were following guidelines more or less, and then, for example, Mother's Day or Memorial Day came around and said, hey, you know, let's all get together for a barbecue, and invited the extended family.
We are seeing that repeatedly. So people are not taking it seriously. The fact that they should only really spend prolonged period of time with individuals who live under the same roof as them. It doesn't matter that you're related to them. If they don't live under the same roof as you, in the same house as you, you should limit your length and proximity in terms of interaction with them.
It's probably not fair to call it a spike, but infections are increasing almost daily. What's your level of concern at this point?
My level of concern is significant because people are not listening to the tenants. We can't stress this enough. People need to take this seriously. COVID-19 is not going away anytime soon. It is still a threat. And what we are seeing in the community is people thinking that it has gone away. It is no longer an issue. We have people questioning that it even exists. That is very unfortunate. And we're seeing that in the lack of adherence to the tenets that we would like them to adhere to. People going to a birthday party when they already know that they have a fever. People traveling in from out of state and getting on a flight when they knew that they were having a cough. Those are very dangerous actions. And we're really disappointed. I'm disappointed that residents aren't actually taking this seriously and also really putting at risk their loved ones, their friends, their family members when they go to these gatherings.
The situation in Sutter County, in looking at the number of cases and the population, certainly Sutter and Butte have a similar number of cases, but Butte County's population is more than twice that of Sutter County. So the rate is actually much, much higher in Sutter County. Is that a concern?
Again, in terms of the significant increase in the new case count, when we diagnose a case, we actually do a very good job in terms of the Bi-County Department Operations Center of immediately reaching the index case and then asking for all family close contacts, and also if they have work close contacts, to get tested. So you're going to notice that we're actually doing a good job reaching those contacts. And then identifying the significant family household clusters, and then for some even workplace clustering of these cases. In the workplace, what we're noticing is essential sectors who have maintained being allowed to remain open all this time, never closing since middle of March. Some of them are not implementing the robust measures that we know are helpful. Daily symptom screening and temperature check before employees start work. Sending employees home if they fail the symptom screening, social distancing, and making sure that employees wear facial covering when social distancing is not possible. Those are measures, not to just say, okay, let's do them, but they are actually really, really helpful to ensure that we don't have workplace outbreaks. And most of the workplace outbreaks that we have identified are in those workplaces that do not have all those measures implemented.
Dr. Luce, Sutter County's population is about 20% larger than Yuba County's, yet the caseload in Sutter County is almost three times what it is in Yuba County. Any theories as to why that is?
It's unfortunate that the majority of those family and household clusterings are all located within Sutter County. So within the Sutter County case counts, we have actually identified at least five clusters of family and household. So one, as I noted, have eight positive, and then the remainder of four have at least three to four positive.
Dr. Liu, I've noticed from the statistics that in Sutter County, you've located 18 asymptomatic cases and three in Yuba County. That's about a fifth of all cases are asymptomatic. Are those people getting the symptoms later? I guess, how and why are they getting tested in the first place?
They're getting tested because we need to know the extent with which when someone is a close contact, how many of those individuals actually are infectious. So say if one of those asymptomatic individuals tests positive and we know where they work, we would then expand to their work site to make sure that their coworkers who are deemed close work contacts are also screened. The goal of contact investigation is to expand the circle of infection, individuals who might have been exposed, and quickly isolating, quarantining them to break the chain of transmission. Because if you only focus on the symptomatic cases, you're going to miss a significant chunk of those individuals who are already infectious.
I'm wondering if you're seeing any trends in terms of recovery. We're hearing that people who are considered recovered have extreme health problems. Are we seeing any trends in terms of recovery?
When we define recovered, we are noting that someone is deemed non-infectious. The designation of being non-infectious does not mean that the consequences of COVID-19 infection is gone. Like you just noted, a lot of these individuals have lingering symptoms and they can be very, very significant.
With the increase in cases that we're seeing and the relatively smaller population of both Yuba and Sutter counties, how close are we to reaching that trigger point where the restrictions that were recently lifted have to go back into place?
The state has county-specific metrics that they monitor. And at this time, fortunately, both Yuba and Sutter are not listed within the counties that the state is concerned about. And that comprises of number of new cases within a 14-day period for population of 100,000. They also monitor hospitalized cases, and they monitor what's called a test positivity, meaning within a one-week period, the percentage of the tests that actually return positive. As of this time, fortunately, both Yuba and Sutter are doing fine.
That was Dr. Fong Liu, health officer for Sutter and Yuba counties, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. More on how to protect yourself during this pandemic when we return. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. For all of those who might need a reminder, the coronavirus has not gone away. There is no cure. There are no treatments. Perhaps an even more important reminder is that even with all of the reopening happening around us, it is not a time to become complacent, especially now with reopening. We're faced with more choices, both in whether or not to stay home or go out, and also in how to mitigate risk of contracting the virus when we are out. Today, we'll get some practical guidance and tips on how to stay safer when you're getting back to normal life from UC Davis Assistant Clinical Professor of Infectious Diseases, Natasha Toznik, who spoke recently with CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak. The first question Beth asked was Toznik's opinion on face masks.
So I'm happy that you asked me that as an opening statement, because I actually wanted to start with saying that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that all of the things we'll be talking about today should start with avoiding complacency at this time. I know everybody's been cooped up at home, isn't excited to get back out, but ultimately the recommendations are still to continue to wear the mask, wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds, especially before and after activities outside your home, and finally to continue to maintain that 6 foot of social distancing.
So I've already had this experience of going into a restaurant and all the serving staff, and in fact, all the staff in a restaurant might be wearing masks. And you look around and almost no one sitting at the table or standing at the bar is wearing a mask. What about one-way masking? How much help is that?
Well, again, for the masking, it's a courtesy, really. So when an individual is wearing a mask, the goal there is to protect others, and by others wearing the masks, it will protect you. So certainly the servers are, in essence, protecting the clients, but the clients may not be returning that same courtesy, even though it may be unintentional. But again, eating and drinking is very difficult to do while wearing a mask.
So let's go down some of the list of places that people are going to in this phase three opening. And one of the biggies is a hair salon, but I'm going to add to that list a nail salon, or if you've been waiting and want to get a tattoo, you're going back into these places. They're going to look different because of modifications. What should we know in terms of safety?
So I can start with hair salons, as most of these are already open, and if not everyone is aware, the nail salons are not yet open, but it looks like the governor is planning to open them this coming Friday on the 19th. Regardless of that, ultimately either location should be limiting the number of clients and workers in the building at one time in order to try to do the best possible methods of maintaining social distancing. Obviously, the operator and the patron are not going to be able to socially distance 6 feet from one another. However, they should be able to do so from other staff and patrons. In terms of the salon, I would certainly call ahead of time. Don't be shy to ask about what their policies are. And most salons at this time that are normally offering beverages or brief massages should not be offering these at this time. And in addition to that, also avoiding magazines and the waiting room. And for the salons, I would caution all the ladies out there in particular that the blow-drying services are probably not going to be available at this time, given concerns for circulating infectious particles, especially in asymptomatic individuals. And this one's really tough, but you have to try to limit your conversation with your stylist at this time.
Mm. Okay, we could spend a lot of time there. Did we mention the tattoo situation?
We have not talked about the tattoo situation, but that I would say that is following all of those same recommendations. Again, the 6 foot distancing is not going to be possible, but I would say a tattoo is probably one of the more non-essential things to do at this time. And we have to remember that at the end of the day, it's a healthcare crisis and not really a beauty crisis. So I would strongly advise people wait on getting tattoos at this time, particularly if you're in a higher risk category.
I hear what you're saying, except I can imagine that somebody might feel very compelled because of the time that's happening, whether it be COVID, whether it be the George Floyd situation or protest, mm-hmm. to really make some sort of a mark in that way. So I think the guidelines in terms of safety with tattoos is really important. I want to move on, though, to the gyms, because our particular gym might be open again, and workout safety is a pretty critical issue right now.
Yes. So for the gyms, again, do your research before you go. See if your gym or the gym you're interested in going to is limiting how many individuals are allowed in at the same time. And just be aware that the locker rooms may be off limits. And even if they are, try to avoid using them as their shared area with a lot of frequently touched hard surfaces and may not be cleaned as often as, say, the gym equipment. When you look around, the equipment should be kept free of close contact. For example, every other treadmill or elliptical should be off limits, and you should attempt to stay 6 feet away from others as much as possible. I would also recommend cleaning the machines before and after you use them yourself with the disinfectants that are available at the gym. And if you require the use of any sort of rubber or foam objects, such as a mat, a yoga block, the strengthening bands, then I would recommend bringing these yourself, as they are notoriously difficult to sanitize despite someone's best efforts. The only other couple things I would mention that may be helpful are to go during slower times, potentially midday or later in the evening if that's possible for you. And then finally, I would recommend bringing at least two towels, one for sweat so that you don't touch your face, which is really important at a gym because it's difficult, more difficult to keep your hands clean there, and one for equipment that you can use to lay on. And if you sweat a lot, then I highly recommend the use of a sweatband. Again, you really want to try to stay away from touching your face.
Natasha, what's your thought about exercise classes that are in a room or a studio? We're not at that point yet, but there is some thought that maybe it will come by beginning of July, perhaps. Again, we don't know. But what about returning to those classes?
So if you're really set on returning to those classes, I would just try to limit the amount that you go to. And again, hopefully the gym is also limiting the amount of people that are in the class so that you can better maintain that social distancing. And lastly, I would say if you can find one where they offer the group classes outside, that would be even better because there's better ventilation in an outside location.
Oh, it just feels good, too. So movie theaters can open. A number of them have not. They've decided to wait. But when we do go back into a theater, might this be a place where a mask is required?
Yes, Beth. So from what I have found, looking at the mandates and guidelines that have been posted, most movie theaters will strongly encourage the use of the mask, but may not necessarily recommend that they're mandated. But in general, and I would advise taking what I say here with a grain of salt, but going to the movies may not actually be quite as unsafe as we think in terms of many people being in a confined space. But one reason for this is that, in general, people are hopefully not talking to each other during a movie, unlike bars and gyms. And in addition, all people are facing the same direction. So this is known to help decrease the potentially circulating infectious particles. And in addition, social distancing can be practiced if a theater assures that they limit the number of guests that can sit 6 feet apart, such as every other row in a checkerboard-type configuration.
You just mentioned bars. Scenes from bars and nightclubs over the weekend, not just in California, mm-hmm. do show that people were really excited to get back out. Many of the places were quite full. In some places, not much in the way of masks or even social distancing. But if you're one of those people that really wants to go out but also wants to be cautious, what do you do?
So you stated it correctly, Beth. Bars are tricky and one of the higher risk locations. Again, eating and drinking with a mask is not really possible, and socially distancing is going to be more challenging in such a location, even if the bar tries to implement such social distancing measures. I mean, usually when you go to a bar, the idea is that you're there to socialize and speak with people. So proximity is something that you sort of look forward to. And there might also be some complacency, especially after patrons are imbibing. So ideally, bars would be limiting the number of patrons present at any given time. And you could go to a place that you're familiar with members of your same household. I chuckle because I know that that's very difficult to do. Again, people want to go out and meet others, but from a safety standpoint, it's not the best time to go out and meet new people and mingle, and I'll sort of leave it at that.
All right. shopping malls. I had friends tell me they stood in lines for 4 or 5 hours over the weekend just waiting to be able to go back into their favorite place. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about being anywhere where we're shopping with a cart, with other people. But mm-hmm. will you add to that public bathrooms sure. and the safety at the restroom?
Sure, absolutely, Beth. So for shopping malls, most of the places, from what I can tell, are limiting the number of people, which is why the lines exist, and also the number of stores that are open. When you do go, or if you do go, try to avoid the common places for congregations, such as the seating areas, the massage chairs, maybe even the playgrounds for the kids. Skip the food court if you can, and really try to focus on targeted shopping. I know that one's tough because for pastime, we like to go to the mall and sort of look around. But really, this is a time to have a list, have a goal, get in and get out, so to speak, and just be very cognizant of the items that you are touching, particularly hard surfaces. So for the shopping itself, if you're going into a dressing room, that would be a little bit higher risk. So make sure if you're touching the handles that you disinfect your hands afterwards. And if you purchase any clothing, I'd probably recommend washing it prior to wearing it once you have returned home. And on that note, in regard to the public restrooms, sometimes that's just unavoidable. So if you can, try not to touch any of the fixtures, particularly after you have washed your hands. So if you can, use a paper towel to dry your hands as opposed to the air dryers, and then use that same paper towel to turn the water off and open the door and or turn off the light switch. And if you have disinfecting wipes or spray on you, which hopefully most of us do, then please utilize them. And lastly, for the females, and to be frank, I would stand and or hover if you are able to do so, just to minimize contact again with those hard surfaces.
I appreciate that. Also, you're giving us a good reminder to wash our hands, which yes. is something we were saying so much in the beginning. And we've got to just get back to wash your hands for,
Absolutely.
2 or 3 rounds of the song and nice, good soapy bubbles. Okay, we just have a quick minute left, but people are going to be getting on an airplane this summer, maybe for the first time since March. How do you travel on an airplane safely?
Yes, excellent question. So travel prepared. This is one of those situations where you want to take your masks, gloves, disinfecting wipes, just be ready. Depending upon which airports you travel through, remember that major cities have thousands of travelers passing through from every corner of the world. So if you can, try a smaller airport. And then once you get onto the plane, aside from masking, I would highly recommend wiping down your seat and in particular the tray table, which is usually the dirtiest part of the airplane, and not disinfected as regularly. And then I have a few more things, but I know one big question with the time we have left is where to sit on an airplane.
Right.
So the window seat, it looks like, is considered the safest, followed by the aisle seat and then the middle seat. However, you have to realize if you're sitting within 3 to 6 rows of an individual who is infected and may not be aware, then your chances of infection go up significantly. So it is sort of a gamble, but still your safest bet.
That was Natasha Toznik, Assistant Clinical Professor of Infectious Diseases at UC Davis, speaking with CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak. And that is your program. As always, if you have any thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Haracha, Eric Radaviel, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.